Hello, my name is Marcus Freestone. Welcome to episode 2 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. This is a companion to my free ebook of the same name, which has now topped 16,000 downloads. Before we start, I just need to mention that the forum I made reference to in episode 1 is now no longer extant. It is an X forum. Basically, I installed a PHP script, it worked for a few hours, and then very much didn't work at all after that. I also tried installing a simple comment box. That didn't work either. Therefore, because life is too short to waste any more of it talking to tech support people, from now on, please just email me, contact@marcusfreestone.com. That's contact@marcusfreestone.com. I want to hear your ideas for future episodes and hopefully soon begin to read out your thoughts and experiences during the show. There, that's the admin out of the way, now we can proceed. I've subtitled this episode, Physician Heal Thyself, because I have very much not been taking my own advice lately. I have, to be blunt, been depressed and suicidal. Now that I'm better, I thought it would be useful, both for me and listeners, to analyse this experience from afar. Okay, about a week, and delineate exactly why my brain did that to me. I've been through enough of these troughs, I should know how to deal with them by now, so why couldn't I cope this time? Well, a lot of emotional stress concerning another person that I won't go into, and a combination of too little sleep, far too much alcohol, and forgetting to take my antidepressants for 3 days. I hope you could hear the inverted commas around forgetting. I didn't forget. I made a series of conscious and really bloody stupid decisions that I would not take my tablets because I needed, there they are again, a drink, and I feel really sick if I drink within a few hours of taking the tablets. Anyway, now I haven't had a drink for a few days, I've had some really good sleep and great talk with a couple of friends, and I feel much better. So let's crack on with some positive thinking and meaning. What you're about to hear is something I recorded recently when I was trying to get to sleep. I put my phone next to me on the pillow and just let the thoughts spill out. I talk about the possible meaning of some recent dreams and, well, I'll let you listen to it now and then afterwards we'll get deeper into the different kinds of meaning people have or seek in their lives. Over to me.
It's nearly midnight and once again I find myself trying to quieten all the contradictory voices in my head. It seems as though my brain is always trying to tell me something that I just can't fathom. Lately, it's been giving me some really weird, impenetrable dreams. I've had a recurring dream for many years, a sort of anxiety dream, of which I've had many. I had this one again last night, admittedly after quite a lot of alcohol, so things were pretty messed up in there, my head, I mean, and in the dreams. But I don't know why I had this particular one last night. I'm yet again, for probably about the 50th time in my life, over the last 20 years, I've dreamt this. I'm in school, a couple of months away from taking my A-levels, which I know that I'm going to fail, and I decide to quit school and look for a job instead. This is slightly based on reality, in that I did, in the beginning of the upper six, go for a job interview, but I didn't get it. And I ended up staying and taking my two A-levels and getting an E and a U because I put absolutely no work into them. In fact, I, with my English literature paper, which is the one that I got the U on, I deliberately answered at least one question on a book that we hadn't read and that I'd never read. I wrote an essay on a book I'd never read and knew nothing about. So it's not really surprising I ended up with a U. But in the dreams that I have frequently, it seems as if quitting school and looking for a job is the most radical, dangerous, scary thing I can possibly do. And so I put it off for ages and just stopped going to school and dither around in a sort of frenzy of indecision. Now, while I am a fierce opponent of Freud and all that nonsense about dreams that he and others spout, I do believe that dreams are our brain de-junking and defragmenting itself at night. And if you analyse them rationally, you can see that some dreams, especially if they keep recurring, are a metaphor for something in your life. But for the life of me, I cannot figure out what this school dream is trying to tell me. At the moment, the real meaning of this dream is as obscure to me as the meaning of the dream I had once a few years ago about swimming to a small island in the middle of a lake which had a lighthouse on it to rescue the cast of Friends. I don't know what that dream meant. I did end up having sex with Jennifer Aniston, but then that's just pretty basic and obvious wish fulfillment on my part. But the rest of it, I've no idea. That was one of those just random, meaningless associations in the brain. And yet, previous to the school dream, I used to have a recurring dream for several years. Sometimes I'd have it every night in some form or other for weeks on end. I suppose it was an archetypal anxiety dream, archetypal in the Jungian sense. I'd be in a shop, either a shop that I knew or some random shop I'd imagined, and I would get to the till and I would know that I had plenty of money on me to cover the items that I bought. And I'd get to the till, the items would go through and they would say, that's X pounds. And I would open my wallet and there wouldn't be enough money. And I would search in my wallet, in my pockets, for the money that I knew I had. And this would go on for about 20 or 30 minutes while other people were standing around getting annoyed. And I just went on this sort of OCD loop of looking for something I knew was there, but simply wasn't there. I had another similar one. I have no idea what the hell this was about or what it meant, in many different settings. And I had this one last night as well. I go into a bar. It's usually a different one every time. It's always an imaginary bar, one that I've never been to. And I go up to the bar and I have a look, as I do in real life, for, you know, have they got any decent ale, as opposed to the chemical, sugary, poppy lager and cider shit, children's booze. And I have a look and I find something that looks good and I say, I'll have a pint of that, please. And then I have my pint and it's delicious. And then a while later, I go back to the bar and they don't do that ale. It's not there. And I ask for a pint of it, and they say, we don't do that. And I say, but I've just had a pint. And that goes on for about 20 or 30 minutes as well, with me just wandering constantly up and down the bar in a sort of, in another frenzy of OCD-ness, looking for this non-existent beer, which I know for a fact that I've just had. It's another form of the anxiety dream, and maybe it's as archetypal as the losing the change one. And maybe the fact that it's beer doesn't mean anything, it's just a random Jungian symbol that my brain's latched onto to represent something else. Maybe it's a metaphor for some kind of paranoia I have, that there's something that everybody knows that I don't, or that maybe that I'm going mad, that I'm absolutely certain that I know something, and then everyone else in the world would agree that I don't know that. Or maybe it's something to do with the nature of reality. Maybe that first pint I had was existing in quantum conditions. Maybe it was a virtual pint that only existed for that instant, and then it vanished and never had existed. But the most annoying recurring dream I have is where I find myself living back with my mother and stepfather, and I'm half the age that I was then and half the age I am now. And it could be in any one of the houses that we lived in. And I'm there and I feel trapped, and I'm being treated like a child, even though I'm not a child. And I'm being punished for things that I haven't done, or things that I have done, but which nobody in their right mind would think deserve any form of punishment. And it's like being in prison. And when I wake up and I remember that I'm a middle-aged adult and I live on my own and I can do what I like, it's such a gargantuan sense of relief, I really can't express it. But I don't know why I keep having this dream. What's it trying to tell me? What's the meaning of it? Is it that I should be grateful for the solitary, relatively frugal life, simple life that I have? Is it reminding me that from the age of 7, my number one ambition was to live on my own and be able to make my own decisions?
I had those types of dreams again last night, but I still don't know what they mean. Anyway, I hope that was an interesting peek into the workings of the brain, and it may unlock something for somebody listening who is also having recurring dreams. So, meaning. Although I state clearly in the book that I believe life per se has no inherent meaning, everybody has things which are meaningful to them. Meaning is a metaphysical human construct which we choose to attach to things, not an intrinsic property of the thing itself. That may seem like a needlessly pedantic distinction, but I believe it to be a vitally important component of human psychology. Once you realise that all meaning comes from within yourself and is projected outwards, then you are freed up to choose what is and isn't meaningful to you personally. These choices can, of course, be forced upon you by other people, especially in childhood, but we are always free to make new choices. As Jean-Paul Sartre said, we remake ourselves every single day of our lives by making new choices. We are nothing but the sum of our past commitments. Our thoughts, emotions, worldview, sense of meaning are not fixed and static. They are constantly evolving throughout our lives. Therefore, if something you once found meaningful is no longer working for you, you are free to recalibrate your meaning portfolio, which is a phrase I've just invented and will be using a few times in the coming minutes. Another important point to bear in mind is that meaning is a personal, subjective construct, not a collective, external, objective construct that is out there in the universe or society and to which we all have to subscribe. If something has meaning for you, then anybody else's opinion as to the meaninglessness of it is utterly irrelevant. I personally do not, and never have, believed in any form of God. That is part of my personal meaning portfolio, and is neither affected by, nor does it exert any effect upon, the belief that there is a God that other people hold. Besides, because everybody lives in their own individual, subjective, cognitive universe of their own construction, and none of us can experience the cognitive universe of anybody else, nor they ours, it is impossible to know whether or not anybody is having the same experience as us, even though they may appear outwardly to be finding meaning in exactly the same thing. Whether there is or isn't a God, every single person who believes in a God is imagining their own personal God and constructing their own personal meaning from their own life experiences and inherent biases and opinions. In other words, to take the existential view, as I am often prone to do, if there is a God, the qualities and components of that God are unaffected by the various contradictory subjective personal gods of all believers. It is equally true that the fact of God's existence or non-existence bears no relation to whether or not anybody believes in that God. If there is a God, then no human being can possibly know exactly what that God is. If God were fathomable by mere human beings, then he wouldn't be God. Therefore, any collective sense of sharing the same God is equally illusory as any collective sense of sharing the same meaning portfolio. There's an old philosophical question, do you see red like I see red? The answer is no, for all the reasons I've just described, but the real, fuller answer is that there is simply no way of knowing, for all the reasons I've just described. Therefore, it cannot and should not matter to any of us what other people do or do not find meaningful, or if they pour scorn upon the things that we personally find meaningful. So, my conclusion on meaning for this episode is this. Don't search for meaning in the external world, in other people's opinions of you, in material acquisition. Find the meaning that you feel in your own mind. It could be as simple as owning a pet, cooking someone a meal, a favourite book or piece of music, or as complex as learning a new language or a new branch of physics. Whatever you feel is meaningful to you, that is your meaning, and the secret of contentment is to fill your life with as many of these experiences as possible. In fact, one of the conclusions I can draw from my recent depression is that when you feel that despair, all sense of your personal meaning portfolio goes away. And in my experience, that's one of the first things to return when you come out of a depression. I remember, thankfully, many years ago when I had a terrible experience of going to my GP in a suicidal state, and he just sat there tapping his fingers waiting for me to stop crying. And I ended up going to a horrible sort of Victorian psychiatric hospital that just stank of piss and shit. And as I was in the waiting room, one of the orderlies walked past humming the theme tune to the Addams Family and laughing to himself. So it was a lovely, caring institution, as you can imagine. But I was in the waiting room, and there was a young woman there with, I presume, her father, and he was trying to restrain her from banging her head against the wall or jumping out the window. And they left, and I was just sitting there feeling terrible, and then suddenly it was as if, almost as if I sort of had an instantaneous brain transplant, like whatever it was that had been over me since I woke up that morning it just lifted, and it was almost as if I physically saw it go out of the window, which was handy because a couple of minutes later I had what must surely be one of the most useless psychotherapy sessions of all time. Anyway, no need to go into that. But when I got outside of this horrible building, which was at least in nice grounds, and it was a half-hour walk through the countryside for me to get to where I lived at the time, I got outside and the sun was shining, and I immediately became aware that I was enjoying the fact that it had turned into a nice sunny day and there were trees and greenery all around me. And it lifted my spirits because that suddenly had some meaning to me. Whereas the previous 12 hours or whatever, nothing had had any meaning at all. Nothing had reached me. And suddenly, just the simple fact of it being a nice day and, oh, look, there's a tree, there's another tree, that was meaningful to me. And I put my headphones on and I put some music on, and the music had meaning for me. Whereas earlier in the day, I'd been trying to watch comedy, I'd been trying to listen to my favourite music, I'd been trying to write, and nothing meant anything to me. So I guess in my rambling way, I'm just trying to say that holding on to your personal sense of meaning, no matter how trivial that thing may seem to be to you, if you enjoy going for a walk and being outside, then do it every sodding day of your life. Because if you fall into a trough of depression or something bad happens to you, maybe you don't have depression, but something happens that makes you think negatively, then if you can hold on to your personal sense of meanings, your personal meaning portfolio, then you should be okay. And that's one of the things that I think we need to keep reminding ourselves, and indeed keep refreshing and updating and adding to our personal meaning portfolio and seeking out new things. New examples of things that are already meaningful to you, but maybe new things to find meaningful as well. Maybe a new type of music you thought you didn't like. Our personal sense of meaning, our portfolio, and I promise that's the last time I'm going to use that word, is a vital importance of feeling content and mentally, cognitively whole. And I think that's far more important than the constant, and in my opinion, fruitless search for external meaning. I'm not sure whether positive thinking or having positive meaning within yourself, I'm not sure which one is more important, or the answer to the chicken and egg question, does one cause the other or vice versa? I don't know, but I think they're both vital components of personal human happiness. And maybe if you find meaning in things, then you will think positively. Maybe if you think positively, then you will find meaning in things. Maybe you only need to focus on one. Maybe they're just in fact two sides of the same coin. But whatever, I think that without finding meaning in your life, then you're in trouble, because if you can't find meaning in any things, then you will naturally feel that your own life, that you yourself, are meaningless. And as I say in the book, the terms meaning and meaninglessness are abstract metaphysical concepts. Nothing has meaning, nothing is meaningless, unless a human being with consciousness decides that it is. So therefore, if you feel that your life is meaningless, then that is not an empirically verifiable fact. That is a decision that you at some point, consciously or unconsciously, have made, probably due to external pressures from society or family or friends or whoever. But the fact that it is a decision that you have made, rather than something that you can quantify and measure in the external world, means, as Sartre and the other existentialists would say, that you can use your free will to reverse that decision. You can decide that your life isn't meaningless, and you can point to all the things in your life that you enjoy and that you find meaningful. I'm not really sure now how to conclude this episode, to be honest. A lot of what I've just said has been spontaneous, and I've not really had an end point in mind. But we're coming up to the half hour mark, and I think to embark on a whole other topic, as I was intending to do with positive thinking, is probably not, will probably be too much for this episode. So I think I'll wrap things up here and hope that this has been interesting and or useful to you people out there in podcast land. Please join me for episode 3 when I very much hope to be including the first batch of interview material, rather than just me droning on from my own voice. So join me then, and keep focusing on that meaning. God, that sounds so ridiculously naff, doesn't it? I'm very sorry. It's actually 1 o'clock in the morning as I'm recording this. Forget I said that. In fact, if you could rewind the podcast, I know young people are thinking, what do you mean rewind? That doesn't mean anything. Okay, if you click back to the point in the podcast at which you personally think that I kind of lost it and started rambling, then cut to there and then press stop, and then that's the end of the episode. Yeah, there's an edit point there. I'm just going to stop the recording now. That's the end of episode 2. Thanks for listening.